Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning to you. You're very welcome to the programme. I'm joined in the studio this morning by the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, leader of Fianna Fáil and TD for Cork South Central. And you're welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in. Now, you join us today as some of your own TDs are speculating very openly about your future as leader of the party. And that cannot be a comfortable place for you to be, is it?
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of pressure that has emerged from the presidential election. And I fully appreciate the devastation within the party, the disappointment in terms of how the election panned out. But also, you know, I've always been a leader that has facilitated critical comment and the capacity of people to criticise. And I accept that. But I think we do have to look at it in the round. I think we had a very successful general election. Successful local elections, successful European parliamentary election, where we doubled our representation to 4. And we were in a position last year to appoint, you know, a Fianna Fáil nominee to be European Commissioner Michael McGrath, who's been a very effective and competent commissioner. And I do think we have to look at it in the round. Mm-hmm. There's not a correlation between presidential elections and general elections. So
they're making too much of it, is what you're saying?
No, I think I'm just trying to give a sense of perspective. I think we, as a party, have to have perspective. They're not making too much of it. It's very serious issue.
Yeah, because they're mortified over it. They're
embarrassed. I mean, very, very disappointed in terms of what transpired. But everybody acted in good faith here. There are no guarantees in the presidential election as we know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can recall Sinn Féin getting 6.5% in 2018, but they went on then after 2 years to get the highest party representation of their history in the aftermath of that.
And I think people would accept that, you know, not everybody can get it right all of the time. But they talk about this extensive pressure, they say, was put on them by you and Jack Chambers to row in behind Jim Gavin because you were so sure that he was the man, and they didn't have a say in that.
Well, no, I think, first of all, I didn't put extensive pressure on people. It's a secret ballot, but I did ring people to explain to them, first of all, the process through which Jim Gavin was identified as a potential candidate. Remember...
Did you tell them to vote for
Remember, no one had come forward prior to about late August from within the parliamentary party and put the hand up and said, I want to be candidate. Right throughout May, June and July, we didn't have a candidate from within the parliamentary party. And indeed, other candidates outside of the parliamentary who came forward. We did research and so on. And there was no sense...
On Bertie Ahern,
well,
I'm
not going into specifics. I don't think that's fair to individuals. But we also did... I took soundings from the party and I could not detect any great groundswell at that stage for other candidates.
Did you ask people within the party? Are you interested in running? Did you have that sort of a conversation with members of your own party, serving parliamentary party members?
Well, we did. Well, within the vast majority wouldn't have been putting up, but some, I didn't realise Billy Kelleher was going to come forward, and I think he came forward.
I think everybody accepts that was born out of pure frustration because they didn't know what was going on.
I don't know what it was born out of. I mean, I'm a phone call away from anybody. But we have a review set up. We're going to look at this in full context and entirety of it, and we'll deal with that.
What was Jack Chambers' role in this? Did he come to you with Jim Gavin's name?
Well, as I said, it will be a review of this. I'm not going to go into every single. There's no big deal here. Lots of names were identified, many people came to me from externally and said this person could be a good candidate, that person could be a good candidate. A lot of that happened in August. I remember Mary McAleese wouldn't have been nominated until late September in that year. So the process has been the same since time began. I didn't invent any new process here. Mm-hmm. The parliamentary party always nominates and selects the candidate. That's what happened with Mary McAleese, and that was the last time we had actually selected a candidate.
Did you tell your parliamentary party members to vote for Jim Gavin in that selection process?
I didn't tell people. People are entitled to vote in whatever way they wish. I outlined.
So why are they saying it was extensive pressure?
Well, I don't know who's saying that. So some people are saying that.
James O'Connor said that.
Yeah, but other people said the opposite. Many people at the PP said they made up their own mind. Mm-hmm. And remember in the early days of Jim Gavin's nomination, he was doing very well in research and polling. In polling, around 20%. And the feedback was very positive.
Have to accept that from the get-go, Jim Gavin was not a political campaigner. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't. That's a fact. He's a seasoned political campaigner. But he wasn't performing well in debates. He wasn't performing in interviews.
Yeah, and we're going to examine all of that in terms of how we select candidates into the future. No one gets it right all the time. I've accepted responsibility For this.
Well, you are and you're not, if I could put it to you like
well,
that.
Well, I am, sorry. Well, I've been unequivocal. I've spoken to the parliamentary party about it.
Yeah, you've made a mistake in thinking that Jim Gavin was the right man, but you're not telling me that you pushed him through that selection process. You're saying that everybody there made up their own minds on Jim Gavin. That's not how they feel about it.
Well, sorry, a lot of people have said, clear, that they voted on their own judgment. I did say to people I spoke to, people I recommend, I think he's the best person for the job. Because why? Because I felt we needed to go beyond the 20% kind of core vote. And if you look at what happened, like Catherine Conley, for example, isn't a Sinn Féin nominee, isn't the Labour Party nominee, isn't a Social Democratic nominee. And she commanded a broad sweep.
But she's political. But she's of the left.
I just want to take my point, though. She commanded a broad sweep of support. And it seems to me any candidate has to do that outside of one particular party-based support. That's the only issue there. And it was done in very good faith. It didn't work out, no question. And I take responsibility for that.
But you can see how people would say you have a top-down style management because we don't know who made this decision with you to back Jim Gavin.
Well, sorry, the parliamentary party decided ultimately when Jim Gavin came forward and was put forward and recommended. But I don't have a top-down approach and I would reject that.
But you have a lot of power because he was chosen because you recommended him.
Well, he was. He's chosen, members made their assessment. I mean, quite a number of members didn't accept, took a different view, and that was their entitlement. I have no issue with that. And I would say if you spoke to people, and I would even say to any of the TDs, I didn't speak in any sort of... I spoke in a very reasonable way, gave the background, gave the rationale. We have discussions in the party. I don't sort of tell people, because that's not that kind of politics, isn't like that in the modern era. It's never been my style. I engage with people. I've canvassed every constituency with the TDs of the parliamentary party and with senators. I've knocked on doors up and down the country. I go down and meet people in their constituencies. I'm not a top-down person.
Louis XIV is what James O'Connor compared you to.
Made the point that was a I don't think James should have made that comment. I don't think it reflects Micheál Martin. It doesn't reflect me as a person. Those kind of hurtful comments are unacceptable in my view. I'm not that kind of person. And I've always engaged. I'm a phone call away from any TD or senator. Always have been. A TD rang me on Sunday night and said, fair play to you, you're always just one phone call away. Because he had some issue to raise with me.
Do you think
that's always been my approach. And when the party was on its knees, I did stuff maybe that others might know. I kind of went through in local elections, went down into the every parish in the country, identified candidates.
This is 2011 you're talking about?
Yeah, 2011 onwards, 2014, identified candidates. We appointed area representatives and I knocked on doors with them. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I'm some top-down person is just repugnant to me as a person. It's not my style.
Okay, well, what then do you think is going on? Like, is there more to this than the presidential election? Why are some people so angry and so upset?
Well, no, I think, first of all, clearly the presidential election is a catalyst for some, but I'm also getting very strong support from within the parliamentary party. So I think a lot of people want to deal with the presidential election, learn from it, and people want to move on because we want to concentrate on issues that really affect people. The people want us to deal with housing, to deal with infrastructure, roads, water, energy. These are the issues that people want us to deliver on, and we're going to deliver on. And my focus hasn't been shifted at all in the last number of weeks for the core issues that face the Irish people. That's my role as Taoiseach.
Your party's at 17% in the polls.
I've been at different percentages for the last 10, 15 years. For 140 opinion polls in the week before the last general election, Fianna Fáil was in third place. Mm-hmm. Fianna Fáil emerged as the largest party after the last general election, despite 140 polls for the previous 4 years saying that we would be in third. Yeah. So you can never allow opinion polls dictate or determine how you behave in government. If that was the case, you'd have government by short-termism and by overly influenced by electoral considerations. We have to do the right thing by the people. And we are, through the National Development Plan, we are saying we're going to transform the fundamental infrastructure of this country in terms of rail, roads, water and electricity infrastructure.
You need the support
because the party will be behind me to do that. The party is anxious, and some TDs and many of the meetings I've had over the last number of weeks have been about that, actually. Not about the presidency, not about the leadership, but many people are saying we want delivery within the parliamentary party. They're saying they want delivery in terms of housing, and they want delivery in terms of the core issues that face people.
In hindsight, Would you have been better off if Billy Kelleher was the Fianna Fáil nominee? Do you think now?
Well, I would have much preferred if Billy had come to me much earlier. And in hindsight, he could have been a stronger candidate. But the way circumstances, I mean, I didn't know until about the 26th of August. But anyway...
Can I ask you about that time, the selection night that you had, where or day when Jim spoke and Billy spoke and then everybody in the party voted? Who was the winner that day, do you think, in terms of how they performed?
I think both performed well. I'm not getting into personalities here, Claire. They did. Both performed well at that parliamentary party meeting. It was a very good atmosphere, very collegial, and it was very cordial. I have to say, and likewise at the campaign launch. Mm-hmm. And I think Billy's a fine parliamentarian in Europe. I appointed Billy as leader. I would have preferred if he'd rung me to say I'm interested, and that didn't happen. And I think that was a surprise to me.
But he was clearly upset at how the selection
phone call away.
Process
no,
was
but,
going.
I mean, I'm a phone call away throughout the entire summer.
I think as leader, I would have been entitled to that. Didn't he say publicly, Taoiseach, before he made a pitch for the role, he did say, we don't know what's going on.
No, but again, I'm only a call away. Mm-hmm. If people have any issues, because I spoke to senators in prior to the recess, I said, we don't have a candidate yet. So there was no kind of big surprise that we didn't have a candidate.
Do you regret not running Bob Geldof now?
No, I don't. I don't mean any. Bob came very late. I mean, lots of people were being mentioned in the latter half of August.
But he phoned you, didn't he?
Very late. There was people on his behalf putting forward his name, mm-hmm. as there were people suggesting many names. This happens for every presidential. One thing we were trying to avoid was all that speculation through August. And if you look at it, some of it was mad altogether, but there's names being touted about the place that never even approached us.
Is it the case, though, that some in your party believe strongly that you shouldn't run anybody? And that's really why it ran so late. I mean, what was your view on that, that you just stay out of it?
No, the party wanted us to run. Some didn't, but the vast majority of the parliamentary party did want a candidate. They felt after the general election win, you know, the party is much stronger now than it was 10 years ago. And people, the majority felt we should have a candidate. But again, the review process now will go into all of that in terms of both how we select, because some people are saying the membership should have a stronger vote or councillors should have a part of the view. And I'm very open to that. But that we need an RDS change and so on like that, if that was to be the determination. And we will review all of that and look at that.
So that will be part of the review. And where is this motion of no confidence at now? Is it going to happen? You don't know.
I have no idea. I mean, I think it's very unfair on TDs. There's people out there sort of speculating about lists, and that's very unfair.
Well, there's a rumour, and there are reporters who say they have been in receipt of a list from your side.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No one in my team or anyone working with me have anything to do with lists. I mean, people working in the Taoiseach's office are working on policy, they're working on issues, and that's what that's it. I'm not into that. And I know, you know, I've been in the early days when I became a TD, that was a thing in Fianna Fáil, which was very, very negative and very debilitating, and it was something I would never want to see in the party. I take every TD on their word. I speak to them individually. We have mature discussions. It's outrageous or unacceptable that there would be any such lists going about the place.
Right. So have you spoken?
No hand act or part in any of that.
Have you spoken to the likes of John McGuinness and John Lehart and people who have been out publicly, even James O'Connor, who we have mentioned a couple of times now? Have you spoken to them in the last few days?
I'm meeting different groups of TDs and groups, and I've met with James and others only 2 days ago, and that was quite a good meeting on policy issues. It was all on policy in respect of...
No mention of support for you or otherwise?
That didn't arise, and that wasn't the purpose of the meetings. The meetings had been scheduled long before last weekend, and I've had a series of them, and I'm in regular contact with most TDs.
You're still of the view that Bertie Ahern shouldn't have been your candidate?
Yeah, and I've made the point in respect of Bertie Ahern. I think it would have raised all the issues in terms of what it transpired in the Mahon Tribunal and so on like that. I've great respect for Bertie Ahern in terms of what he achieved for peace in this country. I think the Good Friday Agreement will always be his outstanding legacy, and it is an outstanding legacy, along with other things. But I think we know the nature of presidential campaigns, and I don't know why he would have brought that upon himself. And I didn't, I have to be honest, detect any groundswell within the parliamentary party for Bertie to be a candidate. And in my conversations with TDs, that was more than confirmed.
And I know you've said there that, you know, some of the comments that are being made are personal. You feel they're unfair.
But by a minority of people. Okay, and by the way, most people at Parliamentary Party don't like that either.
But this is really, this is about political survival for Fianna Fáil. That's what people really are concerned about in the Parliamentary Party. And you would understand that given what you went through in 2011.
Yeah, but we're in a much stronger position than we were in 2011.
But you're below 17%.
Don't mind this poll, for God's sake. I just told you, we'd 140 polls before the last general election.
You had a ghost on the presidential ballot paper.
But no, the point is, it's I can understand that.
You're
but
not
the bottom,
in a good place.
Sorry, Fianna Fáil is the largest party in the Dáil.
But that's why this election should have been a success for you.
Not necessarily, because there's no correlation between general elections and presidential elections. There are no guarantees in terms of a presidential election. Fianna Fáil is the largest party in local government. It's the largest. You know, we have four members of the European Parliament, strong MEPs. We are a strong party. Mm-hmm. We have a strong membership and good. We have good pipeline of candidates coming through as well. And we will be looking and identifying people for the next local election. But the next general election is 4 years away.
Yeah, but you see what happened, and I'm sure your colleagues see this as well. What's happened in this election is you have allowed now the left to come together in a way they never have before, and that they will want to replicate in that general election.
Well, we will see. Again, it's not a correlation between the two, and I think there will be many interesting issues arising between all of those parties before the next general election. And remember, you had quite a divided Labour Party in respect of the presidential. But again, I think there are different order of elections. I think it would be wrong to read, to extrapolate from the presidential election and apply it to a general election in 4 years' time. And remember, this, you know, we were elected as a government, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Independents, because of a strong economic performance and also the fact that I led from 2020 on, navigating through Brexit, through COVID, through the war in Ukraine, now through the tariff and the turbulence in economy around the world. 650,000 jobs created since 2020. We're in many respects, we have the biggest investment programme per capita anywhere in the European Union. And that's important in terms of the quality of life, because we're going to build more schools.
You sound
more
like
homes,
you're pitching
so
to keep your job.
I'm not pitching to keep anything. I'm just telling you the reality as it is. We've got to keep focus and perspective here. Mm-hmm. The last government did well in extraordinary circumstances. This government, already in the first 9 months, and we're only 9 months in government, have set the foundation stones for significant increase in housing, but also in investment in the key areas that will meet the needs of a growing population.
Well,
and our population is growing exponentially.
Gary Murphy has written that for a very young government, on the back of this election, both parties look rudderless, tired and out of touch.
He's wrong. And I know Gary well and I respect Gary, but I can tell you I'm full of energy. And already through the National Development Plan, through the steps we've taken in terms of reform of the rental sector, the measures we've taken in terms of VAT on apartments in the budget, already people in the construction area are saying that those are game changers in respect of getting greater investment into apartments in our cities. And that will be vital to get to the levels of housing that we need in this country.
And I want to move on to other matters. But before I do, on the night of the declaration, journalists are saying they were told by two of your people you weren't going to turn up at Dublin Castle. What was going on?
I'm not in terms of I was going to Dublin Castle, but I wasn't going to do an interview in Dublin Castle at 6 o'clock. I think there was a miscommunication with respect to that, but I was going to Dublin Castle and I arrived at Dublin
Castle. So you were always planning to travel to be there for the declaration?
Yes.
Because that's not what your people were telling journalists.
Well, that's not what I'm hearing. I'm saying that they were saying that I wouldn't do the 6-1 news from Dublin Castle. And I did get, I thought it would be much later in the evening that we'd have the first count. Mm-hmm. That was the miscalculation, no other issue.
Did you find it difficult to stand on the stage
not
if the declaration was made?
I'm a long time in elections. People know me. They know the kind of person I am. In victory or in defeat, I'm a decent person. The first thing you do is you congratulate those who are victorious. You commiserate with those who are not. That's in a general election. It's in a local election. I've had good days at counts. I've always had, and our family have had, a tradition. We stay at the count until the very end, even if I'm elected. I've never left a count in my own constituency until the last person is elected. And particularly if one of our own has been eliminated, I always stay for them.
Okay. I want to move on to a couple of other issues. And the Taoiseach has been speaking yesterday morning. He made comments about immigration, saying Ireland's asylum seeker system is not working and the government should reconsider existing policies in a very serious way. Now, what do you think he means by that? Is he right, firstly, I suppose?
Well, first of all, the levels of what we might call asylum seeking has increased significantly since COVID or before COVID. It was about 3,500 in 2019. And that rose substantially to about, I think, 13,500
in 2023. And we're at
20,000. 18,500 in 2024. Now it's down, we hope, in 2025, about 12,500. So that's a 40% reduction. So the measures that Minister Jim McCallum is taking are working, and Helen McEntee before him, but Jim is, I think, has a very clear focus. We've moved migration back into the Department of Justice. This government has, and I think that it was a mistake, perhaps, in our view, to take it out retrospectively 4 years ago. And looking back in hindsight, saying I think we shouldn't have done that. And I think about 70-80% are refused on their first stage of the appeal. And that's significant because it really points to that what you're looking at here is economic migration primarily. And basically, people shouldn't come to Ireland if they know in deep down that they're not going to...
But you seem to be saying in your answer there that what has happened since Jim O'Callaghan and this government went into office is working. But Simon Harris is saying the government should reconsider existing policies in a serious way.
Well, we are. I mean, government has looked at every aspect, and Minister O'Callaghan and Jim is looking at every aspect of migration policy.
What more needs to happen?
Well, I think in the second phase and on the appeals side, that needs to be quicker. And we are appointing more and recruiting more and so on like that to accelerate the appeals process and to make sure then that people know procedures are strict here. They're firm, they're fair. And then also there's been far more deportations this year and deportation orders signed in the last 9 months, all of which is having impact. And I think the message has gone out. If you don't qualify, and if you know you're not going to qualify, don't bother coming.
Well, Jim O'Callaghan said in Brussels that Ireland shouldn't rule out using deportation hubs that are outside the EU. Would you be in favour of
a system
like that?
He's right. I don't think
we
should rule it out. I think this is a broader issue across Europe.
So that would mean sending failed applicants outside of the EU?
Well, I think these are issues we will examine, and we're not ruling anything out. I think primarily in Ireland, I think we have to have a strong relationship with the UK, for example, because the vast majority, you know, it seems to me, are coming over the border. And there are, I think, issues there in terms of, you know, if people, you know, and these are the issues we can discuss with the British government in terms of returns and so on like that. But we are making progress. I think the message has gone out. We will continue to look at that.
Yeah, you see, it's interesting, isn't it, that we've gone from, as a country, at a very short time ago, we were talking about ending direct provision, that it was a system we weren't proud of, that we didn't feel was fair and in many ways humane. And now there's a complete about turn, isn't there, that we are going to toughen up on every front.
The direct provision, many people were there waiting too long to have their applications processed. And so the investment over the last number of years and the continued investment in the process of dealing with those who are seeking asylum has accelerated. And therefore, that should in time reduce the need for you know, continuous direct provision, where people were in direct provision for years. There are many people in direct provision who have actually been found to be eligible. You know, they're
But they can't
legally
find
resident,
anywhere to live, which speaks to another problem.
It does in terms of, but that's accelerated in terms of people coming out of direct provision. But that creates its own challenges in terms of housing, because people have family reunification and so on after coming out of direct provision if they're legally entitled to stay in Ireland. But fundamentally, it's the acceleration of the processes that's key, both in terms of the initial application phase and also in the appeals.
And deportations.
And deportations.
Which we will see more of, saying?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think about 3,500 deportation orders have been served so far.
We had the announcement this morning that PTSB is to be sold. We know the taxpayer put $4 billion into PTSB back at the time of the crash. Some felt it wouldn't survive at all. It's now up for sale. Do you expect to get all of the money back? I know we have $2.75 million already recouped.
Yeah, we would hope that, but it's the fundamental issue here is not so much, well, that is a factor, but the key factor is can we... can this be done successfully in terms of the wider economy and the wider needs of our people in terms of greater competition within our banking system, which we do require. I met with the banks only 2 days ago in respect of we want more finance for housing, particularly small builders, for example. And we're working on a scheme with the banks and ISIF to make sure that we can get a significant product there that would enable finance to be lent at affordable rates to smaller to medium-sized builders.
So would you expect that there would be another operator coming into this market now to buy PTSB?
Look, this has gone to the market now. The government is supportive of this. Minister for Finance has met with party leaders and so on. This is good news in terms of the Irish economy. This is an indication that people out there want to invest in the Irish economy. We're one of the strongest across the European Union now. We want to maintain that. And I think it is important in terms of our future that we do get a greater degree of competition and greater investment into the market.
You're heading to Brazil to the COP summit. That's next week. And you're heading there as a world leader of a country that will face fines because we haven't met our own targets. It's a difficult place to be in. Even if we follow our climate action plan, we would still be liable to pay fines.
If you stand back and say, you know, this economy and this society has been growing population wise. I mean, the population growth has been quite exponential in the last 3 decades. You take from the early 1990s to now, gone 3+ million to 5+ million. And the economy has been growing, and yet we've reduced emissions, I think, by 23%. It's not enough. But I think it is. We have made significant inroads, and we have to do more. I think the key issue has to be the development of offshore wind. That is key. The renewables is the way forward. I've set up a clearinghouse between industry and government and departments, and I chair it with the Secretary General of my department to accelerate the development of offshore wind. To me, that's the big game changer in terms of Ireland's emissions issue, along with a whole lot of other stuff terms of transport and in terms of...
Yeah, but the deadline for the fines is 2030, isn't it?
Yeah, but the actual determination and formulation of how that happens has not yet been worked out. But we have 2030 targets, very challenging. Europe is now looking at 2040 targets. I think it's important as a country where we accept fully we have to address climate change, and therefore COP in Brazil is very important, because in a world where that's changing, where some, particularly in the US, have a different perspective now, and I witnessed how the change happened in when the UK, the COP in the UK, when President Biden came in, there was a fundamental kind of energy came out of that. And so that's an issue for the world in terms of a potential change in policy towards climate change globally. Now, I hope that doesn't happen. I think China is moving in a more positive direction.
Well, do you think
our respect.
View has changed here since the Greens left government?
No, it hasn't, in terms of the fundamentals of the necessity to address climate change. But I think we're a bit more, I would argue, we're not. We need to bring people with us. The difference, fundamental difference, would be I don't believe in weaponizing every law. We can't legalize our way to climate change, is my view. And I think that's creating problems in terms of infrastructure, it's creating problems in terms of development. And I think that will alienate people over time if there are objections to every single thing that happens. The bigger picture is we've got to reduce our dependency on fossil fuels and get greater concentration on renewables. That will get us cheaper energy in the long term, and it will also be a fundamental game changer in respect of emissions reductions.
Taoiseach, thank you very much for coming in. That's Taoiseach Micheál Martin. We'll take a break back after this.
Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.